Hello and welcome to ASI Cast 189. I'm Richard Marks, ASI's Research Director. And in this edition, we're going to be breaking from our usual format and chat to two recent guests on the podcast, media cartographer Evan Shapiro and media financial analyst Ian Whittaker. Now, both are must reads for me on LinkedIn. And so it's great to have you both on the podcast. Welcome, Ian, and welcome, Evan.
Thank you.
Now, there are so many hot topics we could talk about with the pair of you, but I wanted to focus on initially a topic that both of you have been highlighting recently, which is the growing dominance of YouTube as a platform and what the implications are therefore for broadcasters. It's also a topic that may throw up wider questions about the direction of travel for the longer term relationship between US media technology and the rest of the world. But firstly, I'd like to talk about the degree to which broadcasters should or should not be looking to YouTube as a platform to extend their reach, particularly to young audiences, which is something that has been a challenge for them in recent years. And I know, Evan, I think you're very much an advocate for the benefits of this.
Yeah, I think you have to zoom back out and look at perspective. In my mind, not embracing the distribution opportunity, specifically reaching audiences that are not watching, avoiding a platform like YouTube is very much akin as if BBC and Channel 4 and ITV had refused to go on Sky. Or any, broadcaster had decided to not work with the pay TV and mobile and satellite companies. Where would they be today, as far as audience goes, had 30 years ago or 20 years ago, they decided to avoid those platforms for the same exact reasons. I mean, the revenue split is different, but the basic premise of partnering with a platform who doesn't make content is literally just a pipe, out of fear of cannibalization or that's not for us or it's not the proper platform. It feels incredibly short-sighted.
Interesting, you use the phrase avoid, which is obviously slightly different from embrace in the sense that I think you're talking very much about putting actual whole programs, whole channels on YouTube, as opposed to what the channels do at the moment, which is using it for clips and promotion.
Correct. Yes. So rather than the truth of the matter is YouTube has ceased to be social media and it is now an entertainment platform. And increasingly and almost primarily, it's a television platform. And so to not evolve your thinking, I talk to senior executives at some of these companies and they still make the reference to the cats playing pianos on YouTube as if that's the majority of content. And in reality, the majority of content on YouTube being consumed is a half an hour or more. And very often that is professionally produced by, the largest audience for Saturday Night Live is on YouTube. And for many of the other, properties out there as well. And so the point of reference of YouTube as a marketing platform or a social media platform is really outdated. And so, yes, I do mean fully embrace, and I do mean see it as a way to distribute your long form, professionally produced premium television.
Now, Ian, in a podcast we did about a month ago, you had a very different view. Do you want to give the counterpoint to that argument?
The case for the opposition. I mean, the way that I always look at things is that, usually what will guide companies' decisions and the way that they're thinking about things ultimately comes down to finances and shareholders and the return. And I think one thing that needs to be borne in mind with this is that for YouTube, at the end of the day, what their primary aim is to do is to actually grow their revenues. And if you look at where sort of that is, that will come predominantly from advertising. There will be subscription revenues as well. But this, in effect, is a zero-sum game. And if you're YouTube, you're generating sort of last year was around $36, $37 of revenue. If you're the TV industry, it was around $175, $180 of advertising revenues flowing through there. For YouTube, essentially, what you need to do in order to maintain the double-digit growth that you've been doing in the past is really to take money from the TV advertising segment. There is no other sort of pot of money to go after, and the advertising market is not growing quickly enough in order to provide that sort of growth as well. So first of all, what you're doing here, I think, for TV broadcasters, it's not to say that they shouldn't use YouTube. It's to say they just need to be careful and go in with their eyes open, because you should never go into somebody who essentially is trying to steal their or steal your money and sort of trust them 100%. So there's that element to it. I think the second element I would also say as well is, do people watch sort of content, or do they go to platforms? And I think that's an interesting debate. If it's a question that people go to platforms, and essentially that's how their viewing, as it were, their viewing choices are done, then it would make sense for broadcaster to go on YouTube, because that is an audience that is never going to go to TV because they've actually decided that they want to stay on the YouTube platform. But if it's the case that people go for content, then what it may be the case is that for broadcaster, it'd be better off if those audiences, if they could persuade those audiences to actually move to their own platforms. And the advantage there for the broadcasters is they're not having to share the revenues with anyone else. They're also as well improving their audience share, which increasingly is an important argument in the scheme of things about the share of advertising should equal the share of audience. And there's one other point that I would say here as well that broadcasters need to be careful of is, excuse me, from an agency standpoint, if it gets to the point where YouTube is categorized as TV, then within the agency media houses, then essentially it will become something that is dealt with by the TV teams, sort of rather than, let's say, the online teams. And that raises a whole range of different questions there for the broadcasters about their share of advertising money amongst the media houses.
There's two interesting points to unpack there. One is a transatlantic difference that Evan will be able to talk about more than I will, which is that the broadcasters in the UK do have very well established, iPlayer was one of the first such players in the world in terms of being established platforms. Whereas I suspect the relationship slightly different in the US, where they have their own VOD platforms, but it's not quite as strong a situation for the broadcasters, I think, in terms of their own distribution. I mean, Evan can correct me on that. But the other key related issue to that is the fact that because those platforms have been so long established in the UK, they have failed to get young people on those platforms, and they've had a decade of trying it, which you might argue is why. I guess my counter argument to Ian would be, okay, if I accept your argument, what do they do? Because people are not, young people are on YouTube and they're not going to ITV Hub or iPlayer in
Yeah,
any great.
it's kind of like saying, if you can only convince them without talking to them or ever trying to meet them anywhere in the world, if you can convince them to use your product, which they have no history for and no awareness of, definitely you can succeed. It is that kind of avoidance of data and kind of actual truth that the audiences are in two different places. Yes, they watch content, but the first place that someone who is a millennial or younger, the first place they go to look for the Academy Award winning best documentary film is YouTube. It will always be the first place. In the United States, on TV, YouTube is the number one channel by so much, it's not even really fathomable. YouTube beats all of Disney. YouTube beats all of NBCUniversal. YouTube beats all of Paramount. YouTube beats all of Fox. Even in the month where Fox had the Super Bowl, YouTube was the number one channel with nearly 12% of all viewing. And what's more than that, first of all, if you look at the revenue from 2024, according to Moffett Nathanson, it was more than $50 billion on YouTube. Secondarily, 61% of all advertising on Earth goes to Google, Meta, and Amazon. The movement is already there. But what you have to understand is that of the $50 billion that YouTube generated last year, 55% of it went to partners, went to publishers, went to creators. They are a different kind of television platform than others. So they are competing to sell the dollars. But here's the thing. In case study after case study after case study, I did a project with Channel 4. As a consequence, they leaned in, started distributing the same shows that they have on their app and on their television network on YouTube. They got an entirely new audience. They sold the inventory and saw their revenues. Brand new audience, brand new revenues. Audience they never would have gotten on their app. Audience they never would have gotten on their broadcast. We did a similar study, which we dropped the case study of this week on our podcast, The Media Odyssey, with CBC. They increased their long form content, same shows that they're putting on broadcast and on their app. Not only did they see a brand new audience, so two generations younger than their broadcast, same shows, a generation younger than their streaming app, 15 years younger than their streaming app, brand new revenues. And crucially, it helped them increase the traffic to their streaming app and to the same shows on broadcast. Viewership went up for these shows that were being streamed on YouTube, and they had the best year in their app's history. So it is two different mindsets. It's two different continents of viewing. People who are millennials and younger, people who are Gen X and older. And if you think that millennials are going to suddenly grow a taste for broadcast the way they do coffee, good luck with that.
I mean, that's it's some quite interesting points that are in there. Just a couple of points of clarification. I think the YouTube, the $50 billion plus includes the subscription revenues on there.
Okay.
So we don't know their subscription revenues. So they do disclose their advertising revenues. It is true that the online platforms have taken 60%, and everyone can see the numbers in terms of that. Bear in mind, with a lot of that growth has come from SMEs. So, these are people, for example, Chinese e-commerce companies, their advertisers on the online platforms. These are SMEs that have never really been part of, let's say, the TV advertising ecosystem. So it is, for many SMEs.
All the more reason to embrace. This is new money.
Oh, absolutely. And in terms of that, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that they shouldn't go on YouTube whatsoever. It's a bit like the old Ronald Reagan quote, though, that you trust but verify. And I think for the broadcasters, for example, what can they do in terms of attracting younger audiences? It's absolutely true. They've been, their strategy so far, if you look over the past 10, 15 years, just haven't been great. What they tried to do was recreate the TV experience on streaming, and it was the wrong way of actually thinking about things. I think what you're starting to see now, though, is some of the broadcasters starting to realize that, okay, if we are going to get these audiences, we need, as you say, to sort of give them content that appeals to them. And it's not just necessarily the programs that the broadcasters produce. It's if you look, for example, at TF1 Plus in France or RTL Plus in Germany, offering music content as well. A large percentage of YouTube viewing is music. It is music videos. Again, they don't disclose that, but you can see from the sort of actions that are taking that music videos is actually quite an important part. On the point of the YouTube TV, I mean, I do believe there are vast differences between the European and US sort of markets when it comes to TV. But also, as well, what you've got there is a very, in the US, very fragmented audience. And it is true, YouTube is the number one channel just simply because everything else is so fragmented. But if you wanted to put it another
It's
way,
beating ABC. It's beating Fox the month they had the Super Bowl. And to go back to Richard's question and to your point, it is somewhat different here, but the broadcasters here have failed even worse to attract the younger audience. They've basically given up for all intents and purposes. And now our channels on Disney Plus and Paramount.
And I think that it's a good point. But I mean, look, you're War and Peace. I did a master's in war studies, so we both got, as it were, the war angle on things. One of the interesting things that you notice with war is it's not just the actual size of the forces that count, but it's the concentration of where they are. And I think if you look at YouTube, YouTube again, if you take its aggregate share, sort of is the number one channel. But when you break it down in terms of look of what that sort of share is made of,
9
It's
million
a
channels.
very, yeah, it's a
9
very,
million
very
channels.
fragmented channel.
But this is, and that this is my larger point, and we're almost in violent agreement here, which is if BBC and Channel 4 and CBC and ABC and ZDF can see themselves as creators, not as publishers, not as broadcasters, but understand that it's basically all the creator economy at this point. Broadcast television in the United States, the top 10 shows combined get 60 million viewers, which is less than All in the Family got by itself in 1975, 50 years ago. So even broadcast is a niche to a certain extent. BBC is, the exception. The only exception, really, when you look at it. And even they, when you look at people under the age of 40, they're getting 10% of viewing time. They're no longer getting 25, 30% of viewing time for people under the age of 40. So the question is, where are you going to get these new audiences? How are you going to reach them? And I do think there's a great analogy. If they had avoided working with Sky in the way that they work with Sky now, or, telecom companies, they would have failed to reach important audiences that they've been cultivating for the last 30 years. And the same content reaches new audiences on new platforms. To me, the basic nature of this is YouTube isn't a competitor, it's a pathway. YouTube is not, yes, you have to compete with them for, sales, but YouTube would prefer the publishers sell the channels themselves because they're going to get higher CPM selling that channel only, which YouTube is prohibited from doing. One of the reasons why YouTube can't get very high CPMs is they're selling everything, not something. And it's the same way Comcast can't get great CPMs for the inventory they have on their platform because they're selling general, local time. So I do think there's a way to reinvent how we see the business and understand that, like you said, in war, sometimes the strangest bedfellows are your ally.
Isn't there? I take your point, Evan, but it is more than a platform. If you look at it from a media ecosystem investment point of view, YouTube is seen to be killing television, and its success is seen to be.
They said the same thing
Yeah,
about
no,
Chinese
but bear with
TV.
me. But I'm not. I'm, what I'm saying, what they're saying, I'm not saying I agree with it. But there is a perception that the stronger YouTube gets, the less people want to invest in, broadcasters and TV companies, because they're seeing YouTube eating a share. And if YouTube grows even more because it's got broadcast content on it, we know from our experience with the rise of the internet in other areas that you were in a situation, 5, 10 years ago, where people were talking about massive growth in online video advertising revenues, some of which was TV companies online, with their revenue being included in their rivals' estimate of what their success was. So it
But look at what happens when you take a public broadcaster out of their native territory. So BBC Studios, ITV Studios, ZDF Studios, I can go down the long list. They're all embracing YouTube exactly as I'm portraying outside of their home territory. Well, and by the way, very often inside their home territory. In the case of BBC Studios, generating $2 billion a year in revenue. Bluey is a top 10 channel. BBC Earth is a top channel, and they're generating lots of money in revenue, and they're selling it, and they've built a huge infrastructure for it. So even the same organizations are recognizing that. The other thing is, it is a platform. I mean, we can argue semantics all day long, but they don't make content. They're not a studio. They sell, but they don't sell the same way that the individual channels do. They're not talent based, although they do support talent. And by the way, when TikTok moves to the television set, if they survive the current, threatened ban, this will be the same thing. The next time some other social video platform, and it will happen, there'll be another pure digital player that comes. We said the same thing about recorders. We said the same thing about streamers. We said the same thing. We continue to say the same thing over and over again. And then streaming becomes television. Streaming is just TV now, let's be honest. YouTube, even though it plays music videos and podcasts, because so much of its consumption is now on the television set, in the minds of those consumers, it is TV. There's no putting that genie back in the bottle. And you can either take advantage of the power of that platform, or you can avoid it. Those who do the latter, those who treat it just like user-generated content and marketing, are going to fail. I mean, and by the way, the same thing for the next. YouTube won't be the last social video player that converts to television. TikTok is next if they can survive. But Meta will come with another, and then Microsoft will buy something and they will come as well. And so if you're not prepared for the war ahead, get ready to be, captured.
Can I just come back on a couple of those points? Because again, there's as I said, this shouldn't be a broadcasters shouldn't use YouTube. I mean, they
Right.
should
It's just
totally
how to
use
use
it.
it,
Yeah,
frankly.
how do you use it? And I think going
Whether
outside
as
to reaching,
television or as marketing, one of those
yeah,
two.
and going out to reaching international audiences, it is that's a great use for the channel. The analogy with Sky is quite interesting because we go back to Sky in terms of when they first launched. Yes, they had the Premier League. But if Sky actually hadn't had the main terrestrial channels on its system, then actually its subscriber growth would have been a lot more muted. I mean, there's an argument for saying that the broadcasters in the UK, I mean, they've been arguing for years that the likes of Sky should be paying retransmission fees because they pointed out that a lot of their
They do,
viewing on
by the
Sky.
way, as the pay TV, as that same company does here in the United States.
Exactly, on that whole thing. And so there was a, it's a question of who needs who more. Sort of on this. And I think,
That's true. That is true. YouTube needs the broadcasters very, very badly. There's no question about that. And they admit it. They absolutely admit it.
Oh, and that's which is a fair point. I guess there's two points that I'd sort of make just on this. One is just from the sort of I guess the argument going back to with streaming. Again, as sort of I'm a historian by training and there is what we call the Marxist school of history, which says that history is determined and pretty much we're going on a sort of a predetermined path to the future. History
There
doesn't
are days I agree with that. Yes.
Well, I was going to say, particularly in what's happening in the US at the moment. But there is, it doesn't always happen like that. And if you look, for example, what was the sort of what really sort of enabled Netflix to gain sort of mass distribution
But selling
was
them
the
100%.
well, it was the established channels putting their content onto Netflix and saying we need to generate revenues because we can monetize this content in another way.
The day that those publishers decided not to build their own true competitor, the day they decided to not do that, they gave up. They lost. And I don't think you can go back in time and fix that. I don't think you'll ever fix the Netflix problem. And I don't think I don't they're definitely never going to fix the creator economy problem that they've created for themselves by not embracing at the, the tenets of the creator economy.
Yeah, and I think it's, I mean, look, I'm in total agreement with you there. I mean, the way that the broadcasters should see themselves is exactly that. That in terms of they are producing content, and it can be from professional production firms, or indeed, why not do it from content creators? I mean, it's the same time.
The idea that's come out recently, especially since the beginning of this year, since YouTube's We Are Now TV report from the end of last year, the reactions to it have been just hysterical. The lack of recognition of where the audience is. And we're never your biggest competitor really isn't Netflix anymore. It's Mr. Beast. Because that the yes, you have to compete with Netflix, but it's very difficult to compete toe to toe with Netflix. When you look at the broadcasters, and I'm talking about local broadcasters, regional broadcasters, the biggest competitor truly are the for younger audiences is the creator sphere. It's podcasting, it's vlogs, it's all these other pieces of content that make up the cacophony that is the creator sphere. Not for older viewers, but for people under the age of 40. And to not try to compete in that race. That is the race you're in now. You are competing with Mr. Beast and Trixie Mattel and Ms. Rachel and the Sidemen and Jake Paul. I can go on. Pop the Balloon, which, by the way, Netflix clearly recognizes this, which is why they've bought Jake Paul, Pop the Balloon, Ms. Rachel, and the Sidemen.
And but and again, they're completely sort of valid points, I think, on that. The couple of points that we're just saying in sort of counter argument. I think there is this difference between, again, US and Europe. I think for the US TV ecosystem, that has changed. In Europe, advertising is still sold on a national basis. I don't think the situation is as dire. Some of the broadcasters have now started to do their own offerings, as again mentioned, the TF1 Plus, the RTL Plus, what they're doing in other countries as well. So there is a different dynamic that's going on there. I think this also then comes back to this point. These content creators, they are vital and they sell goods and so forth. But at the end of the day, advertising is sold on a national basis. The question becomes, which we don't know, what the audiences are when it comes down to a single country. I mean, the average, I think research showed that the average YouTube, the median YouTube video gets around 41 views. There's a hell of a long tail that's included within sort of
Yeah,
that big percentage
but
number.
that's
And it,
why, and
oh,
that's why
but
I
just
think
on
there's
that
a huge,
point,
huge
just on
opportunity
that point,
for
sorry,
broadcasting.
just on that point. And I know people mention Mr. Beast, and they mention this sort of, he's selling chocolate, and that's a great sideline. If I listen to the conference course on Mondelez, or I listen from in terms of what PepsiCo is saying, nobody is seeing Mr. Beast chocolate as a major threat. And that's not down to downplay it. I mean, obviously it is a niche, but I think there is an element here of context. Yes, Mr. Beast on a global basis, his audience could be fantastic. But what we don't know is, which is, I put a post on this sort of a few weeks back, what exactly is a YouTube view in terms of TV audience? Because, if you take it to be 10, the audiences are massive. If you take it to be 100, then obviously the numbers look less substantial. I think we don't have clarity. I mean, what was pretty obvious from the answers that got back is nobody really has a clue, sort
Well,
of what
that's
in terms of YouTube views, what does
well,
it mean?
but that's a measurement writ large, and comparing apples to apples in this ecosystem is impossible at this point, which is a huge issue. Which is why I think a lot of advertising is going to move to much more performance-based in the next couple of years, because who gives a shit views as long as actions are provable at the end of the day. At the end of the day, you're trying to sell more chocolate bars, more cans of Pepsi. That's thing number one. Thing number two is Barb is going to start measuring individual 200 channels on YouTube in the UK by the end of this year. And so you're going to start to see just how much viewership each one of these individual channels is going to get. And that gets to the last point, which is the fractured nature of the creator sphere is a huge opportunity for the broadcasters. I guess that's my largest point. BBC, if they chose to lean into, and by the way, the proof is in the pudding, BBC Earth, Bluey, worldwide, monsters, just absolute monsters. Love Island, Love is Blind, like there's so many studio-based shows. If they chose to lean in and embrace the creator world as a creator in each region, they would be the Mr. Beast of their region. The BBC would be the number one creator on YouTube in the UK. ZDF would be the number one creator on YouTube in Germany. TF1 would be the number, or France Television would be the number one creator on YouTube in France. Like the dominoes would fall. They would be just as dominant in that sphere. And that's why I just get very frustrated by the fear of it, because if you lean, and again, I only say this because I have a ZDF case study I can send to you. I have a Channel 4 case study I can send to you. I have a CBC case study I can send to you that demonstrates the effectiveness for them when they lean into YouTube as television. And as I've said previously, this is just practice. There are more rounds of this coming. There will be further digital pure play players like YouTube in the future. TikTok is very m most likely the next one who's going to offer similar opportunities and challenges. And figuring it out is the key.
I think on the sort of I think if we look at the future environment, I think one thing that it's important to note is, these the Facebooks, the Googles, et cetera, the TikToks, they're very much products of their time. There was ultra loose regulation, ultra loose financial policy. They had the advertising revenues of the newspapers to actually take up as well. And also as well, there was the growth of 4G, and now there is 5G that enable their services to actually expand. It's very unlikely that we'll see that sort of confluence of occurrences happening again. I think the performance marketing, I disagree on that. I think it's interesting in the age of inflation that you have, going back two and a half years ago, you listen to company conference calls, and what they were all talking about sort of was the reason they were able to get much higher than expected price increases through to their consumers was because of the strength of their brands. And they pointed out, look, we didn't think that we would be able to do this. Our pricing models were telling us one thing. We got it through. And the reason it was because our brands were so strong. And I think amongst many corporate boardrooms, that sort of has brought home the importance of brand. I think the third point we just want to say is, and it's again, it's not to sort of denigrate the content but it is to say that there is this thing about fighting on your own battlefield. And I think one of the other things that the broadcasters do have to be careful of is, yes, they need to get more into the content space, but at the end of the day, what type of content do people watch? Now, you look even in the US, I think it's if you were to take the sort of amount of YouTube TV that is, let's call it professionally generated content, you're probably looking at over 90%, even in a market like the US, of viewing is still professionally generated content that people would think of, like TV programs, music videos, et cetera. It is not necessarily content sort of content creators. And we sort of younger viewers, I mean, one of my interests on the sideline is politics. It's a very sort of interesting analogy I see here with politics and sort of the question marks of what happens with TV. The debate was always that the future of politics was the left, because young audiences would take, or young voters would take their voting opinions
The
as they got
right,
older.
but the right has dominated the creator sphere, and the
Exactly. Yeah.
consequence that have and this is again, and this goes to the social compulsion of broadcasters embracing YouTube as TV, because as a consequence of allowing the bad actors and just unprofessional journalists like Joe Rogan to dominate YouTube on television, they've ceded the truth and fact to a cacophony of bullshit. And look where we are. So, and now that is even less so. I know this sounds weird for the UK because of the strength of your public service media, but time is running out. The majority of Britons are over 40. That's going to change. And at some point, we need to recognize that the ecosystem has changed as the generations have shifted.
Before we do that, I just wanted to pick up on that political point and widen that out slightly, because I think one of the concerns would be if people are leaning into YouTube, that we are at a point where in other areas, defence, for example, there is a lot of concern about decoupling from a reliance on America for defence, for technology,
Definitely.
or that what we're seen as an ally may be seen at some point as a potential bad actor. The irony is, of course, we spent 3 years
And
ago, 3 years ago, people were obsessed with our reliance on Huawei and China in terms of our defence. Now,
no, so it's a similar thing with YouTube. Yeah, but that's
I'm just wondering, is this the time for European countries to leaning into greater reliance on American technology and American algorithms? If the BBC's on YouTube and Donald Trump doesn't.
Let's just be clear. YouTube doesn't give a shit about any of these companies. It doesn't care one way or another. Not bad, not good. It is a shark. It moves forward. It makes money. That's what it does. I make money. I make money. They got rid of Don't Be Evil a long time ago. I make money. I make money. I make money. But as a consequence, they've built a model that makes money for everybody who jumps on the train as well. And I think that's, there is no personality, there is no emotion to Google. It is just there, and it's going to keep being there.
But the algorithm is what creates the money. The algorithm is what determines who, what you see on YouTube and what you see
Yeah,
next.
but fandom,
They
that's built on more
control
fan.
that.
But that's built on your fandom first. You have to go there and say, this is what I like. And then the algorithm, and this is the other major advantage YouTube has over. And just really quickly, Ian, the broadcasters were never on their own battlefield. They were always on someone else's battlefield. Always. Whether it was the politicians, whether it was Sky's, whether it was Samsung's now and Roku's,
I disagree with that,
Amazon.
but okay,
But someone else is controlling the road. Right, they have to pay a toll in order to get through. Now that road is controlled in increasing amount by YouTube in this case, and by the way, Amazon and Meta as well, just different platforms. So let's like there is the idea like let's make television great again. Okay, let's also remember where the problems were back then when television hosts were raping children. The key element here is. If you don't embrace the technology as it influences your business will fail to adapt with the technology. And that's the moment that we're in. The same thing happened with streaming when we decided to sell our best programming to Netflix and let them kill us. The same thing happened. Hey, we can go down the pathway. There are going to be disagreements on how we think broadcasters use YouTube, but I think the key takeaway here is you have to learn how to use it in a correct way for you. And if you don't, if you poo-poo it or you treat it like you did 10 years ago, you will pay for that. I
Okay,
do have
I'm going to disagree with that point. I think the danger, I mean, is a great, I think it's Sun Tzu that says the best way to defeat your enemy is to convince them that essentially they've lost in the first place. And I think it's an element here that I would disagree fundamentally with the it's a different picture, I think, with the US and Europe, and we have to recognize that point.
It is absolutely.
But I would disagree fundamentally with the argument that essentially the broadcasters, they have no options here. That essentially all they have to do
No,
is,
I'm not saying that. I'm saying you have a huge opportunity. Why would you not take advantage of it?
You wouldn't take advantage of it. Well, you would take advantage of it, but you
Sun
have
Tzu,
to be
use the
careful.
strength of your competitor against them.
But one thing that we haven't talked about, which is also important in this debate as well, is how money gets distributed. And it's a question of advertisers, and they will decide where money puts. But often it's the agencies. And the agencies,
But
when it comes to their
you
things,
also
the
changed the
agencies,
topic.
and when they come to their things, are still very siloed.
But
And
we
when
were
they
on
look at things
politics there.
as,
We were on politics. And in the case of politics, what's happening is when the broadcasters do not distribute their news and information on the social video platforms the way that Joe Rogan and Ben Shapiro do, they lose to the truth loses. And that's a My biggest fear right now is that young people are being radicalized on these platforms in the absence of the professional journalists being present. From an advertising standpoint, it's a whole different game. You're absolutely correct there. But what's truthful is in each case that I've seen this happen, new audience, brand new money. And it's hard to argue with new money. I don't, especially right now when money for broadcasters is the hardest thing to come by.
Well, there's a net and a gross benefit. So, I mean, this is what there is a temptation for companies to go after gross benefit, which is to say we get a new audience and therefore we get new revenues. What you should look at is actually, as it were, the net. Does that extra revenue come with a cost? Does it essentially sort of at the end of the
I will say
day?
that's the first
Now,
time I've ever heard anybody
no.
argue against a new audience. I've never heard
Well,
anybody argue against.
no. But it is if that new audience, in terms of what you do with that new audience, is takes away from what you have,
No one's
then
ever
it
been able
is
to prove that there is cannibalization.
then
And by the
potentially
way,
it is a
it's
potentially it's a loss.
just the
At the end of
opposite.
the day, oh, hold on. At the end of the day, what the broadcasters rely on is TV advertising revenues. And the
Not
argument
BBC.
that is going and the argument that's going around at the moment is that advertising money should equal share of audience. This is why you're seeing Meta talk about Gen AI content and potentially a substantial stream of revenues in the future, because what it's saying is, even if that
We're
content
going to
is
talk to
low
our sex
quality,
bots and we're going to make money.
it will still get extra views, equals extra share of audience, therefore equals extra
Yeah,
advertising
and then you
spend.
could talk about the quality of views inside each program. And that's the conversation we should be battling over, whether the BBC on YouTube should be worth the same thing as Mr. Beast or whether there was greater value of one over the other.
Now, if we were a scheduled broadcast, we'd have run over our slot and the advertisers shouting at us by now. But we're not, we're a podcast, so we let it run a bit longer. But I really appreciate both of you making the effort to take part. Thanks for, as another podcast puts it, thanks for agreeing, disagreeing agreeably. But also thanks for disagreeing, because it's important to tease out these arguments. So I'm going to be listening back to that with huge interest to decide where I sit on the fence. But in the meantime, thanks, Ian. Thanks, Evan. And fantastic podcast. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you,
Ian,
Richard.
thank you
Thank
so
you,
much.
Evan.
It's really a great
And you
pleasure.
too.
Yeah.